This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over A Vineyard Christmas. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Oh, are you, ready for one drag kiss?
I tried to match your flourish, and I only had a wee little part, so that I hope you felt that.
It was beautiful. I loved it. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our lovely irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one divine, oh so ice wine Christmas movie in December, A Vineyard Christmas. I am here with the person who puts a little sparkle, the tinsel, the little glints of joy in my life, my co-host, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with my intoxicating co-host, who I would say would have an alcohol volume of about 9%, Corinne Ain. Since we're in the vineyard and this is Christmas and we're doing this, might as well incorporate the alcohol.
You know, and if there's someone to incorporate alcohol with, it should be me. So I couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. You're my designated driver till we die.
Boop, boop. So today we are doing our opening a little bit different than we typically do. First, we're having ODK's first or maybe second corrections corner that we've had in the history of the show. And then we will be having a little bit of an interview with
Katie Wilbert.
Yeah!
Katie Wilbert was good enough to reach out to us and ask if we would cover this movie because she wrote it and it's fan-fucking-tastic. And we had a wonderful chat with her.
We had a great time watching it. And I had such a good time writing the script. If she listens to this episode, I hope that she's okay with the gentle ribbing that we give her at certain points. But we genuinely enjoyed this movie and can't wait to share it with you.
And also, throughout the interview, she kind of gave us some tidbits on how it should have been. And we were wholeheartedly, like, some of our key points of this movie. She's like, oh, no. Yeah, no, that I wrote that in. They wrote it out. So there's that. It was very informational, that interview that we did. And we're going to release it when?
We're releasing the full interview as a bonus episode over the Christmas holiday.
Ah. So an extra little present for you gentle listeners to accompany this episode is our interview with the lovely Katie Wilbert.
Yes. So, Miss Tamara, you said to me, hey girl, hey, I think that there's some stuff that we want to set right in this world. And I was like, yes, I would like world peace. Thank you.
No, Corinne, we can't control that. We can't. Oh. I've told you this many times. We can't control that.
Damn.
As much as we'd love to. The world is not that simple. It's way complicated, and there's a lot of complicated things going on right now. World peace cannot be bestowed upon everybody via this episode, but I did have a couple of things that I did want to address. The first one being we got a lovely review from Misbehavin, love that name, around the recap we did on Steel Magnolias. And she writes, because it wasn't mentioned, I just wanted to say that Robert Harling wrote the play based on his actual sister, Susan. Spoiler, she died like Shelby did in the movie. It was a play that eventually became the 5-star movie that most of us love. And I did know that, and I did see that in the Prime Video facts. I thought I said it in the movie, but it might have gotten edited out. Or, you know, Corinne likes to cut me off, as she does, if she doesn't feel like she's getting enough of the attention. No, but honestly, like, I really appreciate that shout out because I did think that I said that in the episode, and I did think it was a very interesting parallel. He was a struggling writer and would oftentimes talk to his sister about it. And then after she passed, he wrote this play about her, and then bada bing, bada boom, became very successful. And so it was almost like she helped him in a way in the afterlife to make his dreams come true as a writer. So I really, really love that, Misbehavin, that she said that in one of our reviews. And I appreciate it so much that I wanted to read it on this episode. So thank you.
Thank you. And we love reading our reviews and comments. If you have those for us, please do. I wanted to sandwich in, we did receive a lovely review from somebody, but within that, they just mentioned that they liked that we weren't political. And I wanted to say that sometimes we do get political. Life is kind of political. And we appreciate that this person came on to our podcast at a point in time where we weren't talking about anything political. But sometimes things just need to be said. And we also spent a lot of time talking about the gender inequities and whatnot. I just wanted to give a heads up. Hey, sometimes we do get political, and we appreciate our listeners. And if that's not your cup of tea, totally understand. But regardless, we're here to enjoy movies together, enjoy laughs together, and sometimes talk about the world.
And lastly, I, in an episode or two ago, had made a reference to being crazy and somebody coming to take me away, which I thought after the fact might be offensive to some listeners. And I apologize if it did offend anybody. I am well-versed in mental health issues. It's rampant in my family. And so I said it lightheartedly because oftentimes it's such a hard topic to approach or even talk about that you almost just have to joke about it.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I know firsthand that nobody can come and take you away without your consent. So ask me how I know that. There's a reason, because you cannot be arrested or taken away or institutionalized without your consent unless you are a harm to yourself or anybody else. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said that in jest, and I didn't want anybody to take it the wrong way. So I am just apologizing and putting it right in this, nestling it on the end of this correction corner of our correction corner sandwich. So
I'm going to double down on that with Tamara. I know that saying the word crazy is something that I have worked to get out of my vocabulary, but it still sometimes pops in there every once in a while. I'm human, she's human, but we're always trying to do better. I frequently use the word bananas, or wild, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't happen. Sometimes the C word pops on out and I'm like, but take backs. We live in an ever-evolving time of language, and you know what? I'm glad for it, because things can always be done better, and otherwise, who knows what kind of vocabulary we'd be using if we're just stuck. We'd be still saying these and thems and thys from the Bible otherwise. So now we have a nice little excerpt.
That felt like a very heavy intro. Let's pepper in some more funny stuff, Corinne. How are you doing?
Oh, we're skipping that shit. We're going straight to, and now we have this really great excerpt of our interview with Katie Wilbert.
Today, we're going over A Vineyard Christmas by me, Katie Wilbert. I'm the guest today, and this is my movie.
Yay! We are here with the lovely, the amazing, the loquacious Katie Wilbert. We'd love to introduce you to her by briefly oversimplifying her life. She wrote the script for A Vineyard Christmas, but who is she really? Well, she grew up in Sacramento, California, was a musical theater geek, and moved down to LA after high school to get her degree from Long Beach State, but didn't do drama there because everybody's too necky apparently in the plays. I don't know. Anyhow, she has moved on to do many other interesting things, which we will talk with her about today. Welcome!
Welcome, Katie!
Wow. You did your research. That was a great intro. Thank you. Everyone was too nakey in my college plays. You are absolutely correct.
While I was cyber-stalking you, as one does.
As one does.
I ran across this interview with you, and you were like, yeah, I just didn't feel comfortable inviting my dad to all these necky plays.
I've had conversations with my dad where I've had to just tell him, like, don't watch, or I have to give, like, a real preamble, like, here's exactly what I'm going to say and exactly what you'll see, so that when you see it, you're not offended, or, like, who is my daughter?
Right.
You didn't have to give him any disclaimers for A Vineyard Christmas, did you?
No, I sure didn't. This was actually a relief to have written something that my whole family can watch. I get to show everybody. And that is a nice little change up that I don't have to give any warnings or cautions or anything. It's just rated G fun for the whole family.
Thanks so much for reaching out about A Vineyard Christmas.
Of course.
And when I saw that there was ice wine in this, I was like,
oh, God,
we are in.
Yes.
Big ice wine fan?
No.
No.
Still threatening to buy some. We still have not done it, and one day it'll happen. But Katie, are you a wine connoisseur by chance? Have you tried ice wine?
I do like wine, and I have not tried ice wine, and I wrote a movie about it. I did a lot of research. I guess, too, I'm like, what would I have done? Like, tasted it and then been like, yep, it's sweet. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know that it would have informed my writing that much more as far as, like, the character talking about, like, which grapes it are, you know, in the process and all that.
I would be so afraid that I would take a sip and be like, oh, no, this is horrible. Why do they even go through so much trouble to even make the ice wine if it's so, like, sweet? And I'm just not a sweet person.
I think I do have that fear a little that I'm like, but then if I try it and I hate it, it's better to just not know at this point.
Yes. Yes. I'd say that's a smart writing choice, Katie.
Except for all listeners out there, I bet it's so good and you're going to watch this movie and really want ice wine.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we were introduced to ice wine via Hallmark movies. Did not know it existed before Hallmark movies.
Did not.
We're very excited to get back to our roots with ice wine.
Your Hallmark roots?
Yes.
Love it.
That was over a year ago, Corinne. That was over a year ago. I think that ship sailed, honestly. And I'm the one that has to drink it. You don't even drink wine. So I would be the guinea pig that's having to like taste and be like, that's
so
good. I'm just
good.
Bringing a funnel and a tube. A funnel and a tube. We'll just knock it on out.
Thanks. Thanks. Glad you have my liver in your best interest.
I was wondering if there were times during this movie where when you were writing it, you were like, and then he thrusts her up against the casks of wine.
I wish. I mean, I'll be honest. I watched the dailies and there's a scene in the movie where Heather and Rudy are having some marble cake and decaf coffee and they're like chatting by the fireside and they are eye fucking the shit out of each other. And it's one of the points where I was watching. I was like, oh my gosh, like they're gonna do it right now, I'm pretty sure. And when I talked to Nikki, the actress who's the lead in the film who plays Heather, she's so great. She's like, oh yeah. She's like, we had great chemistry, but that scene especially, like after we stopped rolling, the crew were like, get a room already. Like everyone was feeling it. And I think you can feel it because they're like, it's really fun for me to watch because I'm like, finally some steam. Like it can still be G-rated and we can see that they like, no child is going to pick up on it. But us adult women who want to see it are going to be like, they want to rip each other's clothes off. Like, this is great. This is what we want to see. So, yeah, no, I didn't get to write that they throw each other up against the wall and get after it. But I think that they played it well enough that we get it. The subtext is there.
Oh, yeah.
In the Vineyard Christmas, were there sections where you had like your favorite part and then they were like, oh, no, we're changing this or...
Yes. Yes and no. I mean, I will say like, so my producer, Kelly Lansing, who I worked with at Reel One, was so amazing. Just the best person to work with ever. But, you know, she's giving notes based off of what she knows about the buyers that Reel One is selling to. So you pick and choose the stuff that you want in the movie. So like, if I wanted a Christmas festival, then it's like, all right, no kids in this movie because I want us to be able to have the budget to afford having all these extras in this scene. There were a couple things. For one, the first draft, Heather had a mom that was alive. She was alive and kicking. And also, Shannon and Heather had a sound guy named Reggie, and they were like a little team that all worked at Tannen TV, and that made so much more sense.
Yes, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
It makes so much more sense.
Never would you have like a TV show where there's just a camera woman and that's it. But, you know, Mindy Kaling has said before, romance is a lot like sci-fi, which I think is 100% true, that like to some degree when you're watching a romance, you are suspending the belief of this world and going like, yeah, I accept that that's true.
Yeah.
Even though that's not how real life works. And I think that's really true for Hallmark movies because everyone's working under a budget that is extremely low. So you really like dive into the sci-fi world of romance when you have that many mandates. So like I had written other characters and they're like, we can't afford it. So we have to kill them. And it is a bit like killing your babies. Like
no mom for you.
No. It's fine. Like, I really don't mind the rewriting process, and I can definitely take a note, but you, like, mourn it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of, like, fall in love with certain characters. Like, the dad and the mom had such fun banter, and it was, like, this really warm, nice vibe. But, you know, it also is, I think it ends up being this interesting thing with Heather, like, missing her mom and what it was like being in LA, not coming home after the death of a parent and stuff. So, like, I actually like where it went because I think there's more, like, sort of, like, a heavier reality there.
Yeah.
That's true for a lot of people at the holidays, you know? But, no, originally there was a living mother and Shannon had a love story. Shannon had a...
story for Shannon. I was like, she's not gonna end up with the younger brother.
I know. No, because Anton's gay, so that couldn't happen. And I don't even know if that came off as very clear. Like,
no,
he gets a phone number from someone at the end, but like, Anton is gay, and that was not as clear. And that's okay, because it's like that happens within many, many drafts where like certain lines get cut and whatever. So it couldn't be Anton because that wouldn't have worked.
I was thinking for a while it might be the dad. And I was like, this is a little random, but, you know, it could work. It could work. Honestly.
Okay, I'm so glad you said that because there is some chem there. Like I don't think it's intentional, but I do think like they just had a blast on set. And there's a couple shots that they kept in, like they're in the kitchen, like making pancakes or something. And they keep this close up of the dad, like smiling warmly at Shannon. And it really like sort of gives the wrong impression, but I kind of love it. I'm like, sure, why not? Like, keep it in, make people wonder. But no, that was not written in the script. There was no like love story with the dad. It was supposed to be this cameraman who got killed. But it definitely, like, you can watch the movie and you can see the sparks fly between Shannon and Manny Marquez, whose name I think we never hear. He's just like the dad.
He's played by Vincent Ross. How old is Vincent? Because I was trying to look that up because I got that too. Best friend chemistry with dad. I'm like, wait, how old is dad? Because dad looks pretty darn good for his age for being a dad.
I actually don't know how old he is, but he looks like he could be the same age as Heather.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nowhere online. I looked. I was like, how old is Manny? Manny's age is unknown. Vincent Ross's unknown age.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they kept Manny ambiguous so that he would be a DILF. Like, you could still see him as father figure or, you know, somebody you might want to get to know a little bit more later.
Who knows? It could be intergenerational friendship or romance. There could be a whole second movie about Shannon and the dad.
Katie, do you have anything else on your mind? I know you have a lot on your mind. I'm not trying to suggest.
No, yeah, plenty on my mind. About this movie, I don't know. It's the first that I've had produced, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's so fun for me to talk about. And that said, it's like, it's not a perfect movie, but I think it is perfectly of its genre. And I'm happy that the movie knows what it is. And it's been a fun ride. I've been writing for like 10 years. And so for this to finally, to have something finally get made is a big win. So I'm very excited and hope that I get to keep writing more. And I hope people like it. But I can't control that. So.
Isn't Katie delightful? Thank you, Katie.
And we're going to have that whole interview as a bonus episode. So we hope you take the time to listen to it and check her out and her website, katiewilbert.com.
Oh, my gosh. One thing we have to like post when we do this episode is her. What is it?
Safe space.
Safe space. Yeah. So we're probably going to post a link to that if I have anything to do with it.
Oh, you will. You probably will.
So, Miss Tamara, do you have a synopsis for us?
Yes. And you know what? That last synopsis intro that I did is haunting my dreams.
I love it so much.
We haven't heard that. I haven't heard that episode yet. And I'm just like, oh, sweet baby Jesus, what did I do? You need to stop smoking the ganj before you do the intros, Tamara. Stop it. Just don't do it. Anyways, yes, I do have a synopsis. And Corinne wrote, Tamara, defend yourself. You are not Tammy the tyrannical boss. Type up a synopsis in your defense. So here it is. My synopsis. Heather Marquez, played by Nikki McKenzie, is a go-getter and the television host of a wine-based show called Between the Vines. She's so busy she hasn't seen her family in years for Christmas. And this year doesn't seem any different because she's tasked with hosting a holiday special which should be Christmassy and family-oriented. Because you know nothing goes together more than family and drinking. But Heather finagles a plan. She proposes that they showcase a family vineyard in her hometown. That way she can get her episode in the can and see her dad. There's just one teeny tiny problem. The vineyard isn't there anymore. It's been taken over by the Knobloch family and headed by Rudy Knobloch, played by Victor Zinc Jr. Did you happen to recognize Mr. Victor Zinc, Corinne?
Was he... There was an episode that we did where you made a comment on the person's IMDb photo, and I was
yes, that is him. He was the super driven beau named Roger in the movie we covered not too long ago called The Christmas Cottage. Anyways, Rudy seems very uninterested in participating in Between the Vines, but his brother Anton intervenes and wisely talks the surly Rudy into it because, duh, any publicity is good publicity. This leads Heather and Rudy to work together and confront their pasts, their work problems, and ultimately, their growing feelings for each other.
Ooh.
But will it be good television? That's the question. Good enough to get Heather her dream hosting gig in Europe? Or good enough to save the Knobloch family vineyard? Or good enough for Heather and Rudy to realize their lives pair well together like Ice Wine and Spitzkebeck?
Oh!
That's a cookie. And thank you, Corinne, for writing it phonetically. But how would that even work if they're on two separate continents? Find out with us as we experience a vineyard Christmas.
Yay! That was amazing. And I wrote out, I think, two things phonetically throughout this entire script because I knew I would never pronounce it correctly without it being phonetic. So,
and I thank you at the top of the show because fuck me and my pronunciation. Unlike Corinne, who says everything perfectly. So, Corinne, would you perfectly roll us into the beginning of a vineyard Christmas?
It's probably because I write things out phonetically. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
And so it begins. Heather, played by Nikki McKenzie, host of Read Between the Vines. So clever, right?
So
is in a meeting with her boss, Tammy. Tammy, and that's Tammy with an I, not to be confused. Anything to doing with our co-host, Tamara, here, because Tammy I is a piece of work.
Yeah, she's a bitch. She's not my namesake.
No.
She doesn't have the MY as the Lord
intended,
meant it to be.
Yes.
As the Lord intended.
Yes. Tammy I is the type of boss that instead of just saying what she wants will make Heather feel small and make her go on a hunt for the right answer. Oh, I love it when bosses are like that.
Yeah, I know nothing about that. My boss is wonderful.
Sure. He'd never be like, you know, there's this feeling I'm going for, and I showed you a couple of examples of things, and here's your thing. What do you think is the difference here, instead of actually just telling you what he wants?
Yeah. No, you have to guess. It's a learning experience. You'll be a better person if you can deduce what I'm trying to say.
He obviously needs to get you a Sherlock Holmes hat. I'm just saying.
Yes. I'm like, I don't want to crawl up in that head of yours and root around. Let me just tell me. Just please tell me. So I can leave. Please tell me now.
I like that you actually want the answers instead of to, like, blindly feel around for the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, I will tell you that the right answer is doing a super Christmassy episode of Read Between the Vines, which means the non-Christmassy Read Between the Vines episode that she did for Christmas is getting kicked to the curb. Sorry. Great. The episode that you thought you'd done for the holiday season so you could go home to your family for vacay.
Hmm. You think that they would possibly like have scripts, or they would do proposals that would get approved, therefore they wouldn't be doing all this work and spending all this money for nothing. You think that that would happen at this Between the Vines show, but apparently Tamai doesn't work like that.
Yeah, Tamai is like, you know, I'll know it when I see it. And at first she thought, she's like, I'm going modern and non-Christmas Christmassy. And then when she saw it, she was like... And then she
changed
like
my mind.
Yeah, she was like eating her frozen dinner over like while watching It's a Wonderful Life and being like, yeah, I think that things actually need to be Christmas Christmassy. Yeah. Tamai. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tamai.
Yes. So even though Heather's boss lady had called super Christmassy episodes of things gauche and told her that wasn't what she wanted. I love it when they do that. I don't want this. No, no, no. I do actually. I'm going to fully embrace it after you've done it. After you've done exactly what I've said. Fine, fine. Tamai berates Heather for her non-Christmassy Christmas episode of her show and then says, you're going to need to work over the holidays to crank out this episode and give me something that feels Christmassy enough for me. We're looking to pull in that family wine demographic.
Family wine. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Family wine. We have the adult size bottles and we also have smaller bottles for your toddlers and kids.
Yes. It's perfect. It's like enjoy. We're in Italy. Yes. Yeah. Let's appeal to those six-year-old drinkers is what I say. Heather had been excited to be going home for Christmas to visit her dad, and now those plans have been dashed by her boss. Or have they? What? Heather has a trick up her sleeve and suggests... Oh, that's the other one that I did phonetically. Lake Chelan, Washington, because I never would have pronounced that correctly.
No, it's C-H-E-L-A-N. I would have been like Chelan. She's going to Chelan?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Lake Chelan, Washington, home of the O'Reilly Family Vineyard, the most beloved vineyard in Lake Chelan. This vineyard is not just any vineyard. It hosts the annual Christmas and Wine Festival. Jinga, 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 jinga. You can't get more Christmassy than that. And her boss adds additional incentive. If Heather rocks this Christmas episode, then she will greenlight Behind the Vines European Tour. Mm. So Heather triumphantly shares with her coworker, Bestie Shannon, that she has bested her boss lady and that they'll be going home for Christmas. Forget about whatever Shannon's plans might be.
Yeah, seriously.
She excitedly informs Shannon, pack snow clothes. However, Shannon is a California girl and she doesn't have snow clothes. But, oh well, she's got to figure it out because next thing we know, Heather and Shannon have arrived in the very cute town of Lake Chelan. And, no, no, they're not staying at a hotel. No, no, they're staying at Heather's dad's house.
Yeah, no, I'm going to veto that right the fuck out the door, Corinne. If we went on a work outing and I was like, well, fine, I'm just going to get like a nice hotel. At least I'll have a gym and a pool and hopefully like a sauna and spa. And then you're like, no, we're staying at my family's house. I'd be like, nope, nope, nope.
I hope you like to spoon. They only have one guest bed.
Ah, that's why we need a hotel.
Yeah, I would not blame you. If we went to my hometown for some kind of a work event, I don't know if I would stay with my parents or not. I certainly wouldn't make you stay with my parents.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just like, is that? No, Shannon seems, well, I mean, go ahead, because we haven't covered how Shannon feels about this.
Everything's coming up, Heather. But is it coming up, Shannon? I think not. No, no.
So there was one thing that I noticed when they first went to dad's house, and I was kind of like, at the scene, I'm like, why? It just doesn't feel cold. They're supposed to be in Washington, probably filmed in Canada. They're in Washington. And I'm like, I'm just not getting the cold, like snowy, wintry vibe. And then I realized, because when they're standing outside of dad's house, just over his roof line, there is a hill, a rolling mound of hill that is completely bare of snow. It is yellow and grassy. I was like, oh, there it is. Okay, that looks like the Bay Area hills in autumn, not the winter hills of Washington. So anyways, even though it is not a hotel, Heather's family home is very cozy, and Shannon has never felt more Jewish when she checks out the entryway, because it's Christmas decor everywhere. The set decorator on this film had a motto. I think it was Christmas trees or bust, because in the foyer, there's a 2-footer by the door, and on a side table, a 1-footer and a 6-footer across the room. Christmas trees everywhere. But then Heather gets the upsetting news that the O'Reilly family vineyard, whoopsie, in spite of being a town staple and checking her website, is no longer there. And this is where Corinne and I had a very... we almost went to blows because I was like, yeah. I was like, really, Heather? Really? You're going to go do an expose on a vineyard and not even talk to anybody? And Corinne, you said...
she's already knows these people. She has an established relationship with them. She checked out their website. It was still there. She knew what to expect. She's had years of experience with the same thing happening in the same way. So she should just be like, okay, when I get there, I'll touch down. We'll touch base. It's all going to be good.
So Corinne was perfectly fine with that. And that is why if we ever do a made-for-TV movie about our lives, I will be the producer, not her. She can be my assistant producer, but I'm going to call the shots because I think it was very irresponsible for Heather to go and not even talk to anybody, because what if they had sold their winery and like had to sign some NDAs or something where they weren't allowed to discuss the, I don't know, anything? Or better yet, what if the owner recently decided he wanted to follow the Mother God cult and was hopped up on drugs dancing naked between the vines when she went to go do her expose? You never know. You never know what you're going to expect.
Okay, I hate to break it to you, but the Mother God cult is no longer. Their mother of the Mother God cult sadly died a very blue death. So Tamara, that just isn't even an option.
Yes, but it could. Like, I'm just saying, theoretically, pie in the sky, out of left field things that could happen. You just want to lay your bases
Producer needs to do a little more research before they make statements like that. Now, I would be making calls and contacts.
Okay. But you're extending a little more grace to Heather than I would, because I was like, oh, honey. But then again, if she did that, we wouldn't have this movie. So. As for the O'Reilly Vineyard, it winds up that something much tamer happened. The O'Reillys moved to Florida and sold their vineyard to someone else. However, Heather's dad assures her there's got to be a story there in the new vineyard. You should chat with them. And so, while Heather goes to schmooze the new owners, Dad proposes that he and Shannon go on some old-fashioned winter adventures. Hopefully it's not sledding down that bare grassy hill in the back of his house. Dad seems very happy about the plans, and Shannon is very trepidatious. But she does it for Heather. Let's speculate wildly in this scenario, Corinne, shall we? My dad takes you out on his winter adventure. That would probably be bar hopping to some random dive bars that have cheap drinks and some other weird surprises, like the best free holiday Chex Mix you've ever had.
Yes.
What would your dad's holiday adventures be for me if we had to go out without you?
Oh,
for some winter adventures.
You know what? My dad would be like full on Katie's dad, because he would do research. He would get the San Jose Mercury News. He would find out what all was happening in town. And then he'd be like, okay, so first we're going to be going to this Christmas X, and then we're going to be doing the Christmas Y. And there is this knitting a snowman activity that I think would be very fun for us to do together. Yeah, he would find the activities.
And my dad would be at the bar.
Yeah.
It's so funny because even when he came to Fresno, like he would go be like, oh, I'm going to go to this bar over here. And then we went like on St. Patrick's Day and they had free corned beef and cabbage. It was actually really good. Uh-huh. And I was like, how do you find these places? You don't even live here.
He's like, follow my nose. It always knows.
Yeah. Yes, seriously. The most random enchanting dive bars in the world.
We went to the most random enchanting dive bar with your dad.
In El Viso?
Yes.
Case in point.
Yes.
Yep. The O'Reilly Vineyard now belongs to the Knobloch family, and in the next scene we find out from the two Knobloch brothers that the winery's in trouble, and if they don't do something to turn things around, they are donezo. So you'd think the older brother Rudy would be thrilled when Heather Marquez shows up at his doorstep to ask about doing a feature on his winery. But the reception she receives is about as icy as their ice line. Perhaps it's because she pulled up in a car that was made over to look like a reindeer. Maybe it's because she doesn't instantly recognize Rudy as the owner of the winery, Corinne wrote when I wrote, which, why would she unless he's wearing a name tag that says, I'm Rudy and I own this bitch. But after Rudy has curtly answered her queries, not bothering to stop loading wine cases into his truck as he does so, he finally does stop and properly introduces himself. Heather at first fumbles around because look at him! This causes him to scoff and ask, is there something I could help you with? And roll his eyes. So she gets to the heart of the matter. I was planning on doing a feature for Tannen TV about the O'Reilly's Winery, a family winery that single-handedly built this town, but appears that they've been taken over by a very stoic and unfriendly out-of-towner, so no, I don't know if you can help me.
Ha!
And with a response like that, maybe Rudy is a bit justified in being icy, and he wastes no time responding. The Knobloch family wine is a family vineyard, and we have integrated into this town just fine, thank you very much. In fact, I've met just about everyone in this town but you, so perhaps it's you that's the out-of-towner.
Mm.
He slams his truck tailgate shut, and younger brother Anton rushes out instantly making apologies for his curmudgeonly brother. I'm so sorry for my brother. He was raised by wolves, and we're still training him. How may I help you? Heather Marquez gives her spiel and asks for a tour, and Anton agrees, and the trio head off to the cask room. Rudy explains that their family has been making wine for over a century, and their grapes are harvested and processed using, and this is the technical term, old methods, quotation marks, old methods, which makes their wine superior. Heather cockily says, we'll see about that. And Rudy and Anton are unfazed. The proof is in the pudding, or rather their wine. And they take her to the tasting room to sample some of their legendary ice wines. Yes, gentle listeners, we are going back to our roots with ice wine. Please refer to your first year, August 17th, 2021 episode, Ice Wine Slurpees and Biscuit Croissants, Paris Wine and Romance. Because that is when we first learn about ice wine.
Yes.
And it is not indeed like an ice wine slurpee, as we were disappointed to find out. Heather describes the Knobloch family wine as a snow globe in a glass with notes of apricot and peach. She's a level 3 sommelier, thank you very much. Rudy's impressed, but he's about to knock her socks off because he has the perfect pairing for that wine.
Ooh.
It's his Oma's Christmas Spitzkebik cookies. She takes a bite and mmms, appreciatively stating chef's kiss. Just then, Anton enters calling Rudy by his full name. It's Rudolph. How seasonal. And checks to make sure everything is all right. Anton, what the fuck? You know your brother's hostile and I would be using kid gloves with the lady that could potentially turn your business around, Tamara says. But Heather is hardier than I give her credit for because she assures him that she's just had some of their ice wine with Oma's cookies and it's the most sensational pairing she's ever tasted. She then asks, so what do you plan on doing for the Christmas festival? And Anton looks mischievously over at Rudy, who predictably responds, we're not doing anything for Christmas. We're not hosting. It's just not going to happen this year. Heather balks at this. The festival's the heartbeat of the town, and plus, I need it for my peace.
More importantly, I need it for my peace.
You're not going to do the Christmas festival? It's totally what this town needs, and I need it too. Yeah. I thought that. I would be like, bitch, no. Nope. But once Anton finds out that she has no other options on her back burner, he proposes, how about you feature our vineyard and we can show the world how ice wine is made? Not many people know about it. And Corinne scoffs.
They think it's ice wine slurpees, which is totally wrong.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's totally wrong. But Anton thinks that with the ice wine in the snowy vineyard, they should have a pretty magical seasonal episode, sans the festival. Rudy, not surprisingly, is not interested.
Rudy is not interested, and Anton is very interested. So I'm very excited about the pudding wrestling that will happen for them to resolve this issue.
As am I.
Mm. This next section is entitled No Pudding Wrestling. Sorry, gentle listeners.
So heartbreaking. Why do you got to dangle it and then pull it away, Corinne?
I know. Sadly, after Heather leaves, letting them know she'll be waiting for an answer from them in the next couple of days, they do not pull out a kiddie pool and fill it full of chocolate pudding. Instead, they choose the boring route and talk it out. Womp, 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 womp. Rudy explains that he doesn't trust Heather and doesn't want to be exploited. Don't use me for my good looks and my tasty wines. People might find out about it otherwise.
I know. I was like, when they were talking about their winery being hard up and not successful, I'm like, maybe it's your shitty attitude, sir. Maybe you're turning people away just by being a jackass.
Rudy's like, I'm sorry. Are you good enough to drink our wine? Take this 10-page survey and then you may get to get into the tasting room.
Right? Yeah. No, thanks. I only have an hour to kill, so I think I'm just going to go to the next winery. Oh, it's 76 miles away? That's okay. I like driving in the snow.
Who doesn't? Anton points out that they need more exposure, and this is really the most direct route to it. Speaking of exposure, I was at the Michaels the other day.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing at the Michaels?
Well,
Christmas decor.
Yeah, Sylvia and I were doing doing shopping for Christmas decor for the fairy garden, my sister's fairy garden, so that we could Christmasify it. And we get out of the Michaels, and there is a gentleman who, I use the term gentleman not at, like, very loosely, who gets out of his car. He is completely clothed. He is wearing very loose-fitting sweatpants, and he is completely engorged, thus tenting said sweatpants.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
And so I realized that he just sits in his car. He waits for people to leave the Michaels so that then he can walk towards them.
Oh, with his erect penis?
Yes, with his erect penis. And then when one is leaving the parking lot, he doubles back and you get round two.
Oh, showing you his Yule log?
Yes. And I mean, it was a log, but I was just like, seriously, sir, come on.
Like, okay, do you think that was a fetish or do you think that was like a proposal? Do you think he just gets off following people around or was he like, you want to hang an ornament on this bad boy, ladies?
By the way, I'm engaged now, Tamara, just to let you know.
To who?
The proposal of the guy.
Oh, I meant sexual proposal, not marriage.
I don't know.
Because again, how would he get down on one knee? He'd be like, there'd be some
the stuff in the way. Yeah.
There would be, yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, he gives himself a bit more exposure than he deserves. And much like the slice of cheese guy from MFM, I'm just like, you just keep it not only in the pants, but just strapped down. Strap it on down. Yeah.
What should we call him? The guy was a Swiss cheese pervert in MFM. We've got a Michael Sweatpants pervert. Michael Sweatpants pervert.
Michael Sweatpants?
Crafty Pants Michael's pervert.
Crafty Pants pervert. That's it. He is the Crafty Pants pervert, and we are not here for it. But now we know how to call out other Crafty Pants perverts in the future. Mm. So Anton does point out they need more exposure, but not in the crafty pants pervert kind of way, and that this is really the most direct route to it. And Rudy just needs to suck it, but not in the crafty pants pervert kind of way. And it's called the Knobloch Family Wines for a reason, not Rudy Wines. Thank you very much. Mm. Heather is sitting at the kitchen table back at Dad's house, imagining her boss lady power posing on the other end of the line, waiting to demean her and diabolically laugh at her failure. When Shannon and Heather's dad return from ice skating. My dad would not be taking you ice skating. I'm sorry, Tam. He doesn't do, like, the physical activities so much.
Well, then I'm not doing any winter activities with him.
What?
I demand. Is 70, how old, 72, how old is he?
Oh, no, he's like 78 or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I demand your 78-year-old father get out there on the ice with me.
Oh, he would enthusiastically play his mandolin for you while he watches you go around the ice and cheers you on, serenading you.
I will allow a serenade as I pass. I'll accept that. Don't want Joe to break a hip or anything else.
Well, apparently my dad has bones like cement is what they said when they gave him the double hip replacement a couple years ago. So there you go.
Nice.
I know.
Way to go, Joe. Old cement hips.
Yes.
So he should be fine on the ice.
I just imagine him like them doing his surgery and then being like, okay, we're getting the like whatever tool. And they're like, it's not strong enough. Okay, we need the next one. Still not strong enough. God damn it. Like they're getting out a jackhammer.
You did not know your dad was made out of adamantium.
Yes, he is. Superman's. Shannon is not athletic and hobbles over to the table, decreeing that all of my muscles are so sore. While Heather's dad gleefully goes upstairs to soak. Heather confesses to Shannon that she doesn't. And that's when I just have this vision of Shannon and Heather's dad hanging out in the hot tub together, starting to bond a little bit more, like looking at each other amidst like little steam wafting between them, you know.
What are you insinuating, Corinne?
A little romance, a little intergenerational romance happening.
Heather's dad was not, he was easy on the eyes, and he did not look like he was old enough to be her dad. He really did not.
He didn't, but he had good dad vibes.
Jesse did.
Yeah. Heather confesses to Shannon that she doesn't think she's going to get the interview when suddenly her phone ding 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 dings at her. She's been texted, and apparently the interview is a go. Yay,
she gets to spend more time with Rudy. All right.
Yay. Heather and Shannon excitedly high five, which Shannon immediately regrets, being super sore and all. Hey Shannon, maybe there's enough room for you to soak with Heather's dad. Winky winky, he's pretty hot. You seem to get along great. I'm just saying it's all. The next day, Heather goes to the vineyard, excited for Rudy to sign the release forms. She sees him securing vines and approaches him, only to be greeted with, well, you just don't give up, do you? Heather is initially confused.
You called me! You called me!
Seriously. Heather is initially confused until she realizes, oh, Anton texted me, not you. Look, it's not like this place is bustling with people, and all of the vineyards we've featured have had a boost in sales and visitors from being on our show. It's just a few days. I need a family-oriented vineyard. Okay, now I'm suddenly excited. Does this mean the vineyard has a bounce house and funnel cake stand? Because if that is, I want to go to a family-oriented vineyard too, because I love funnel cake.
And you know what? Bouncing in a bouncy house any other way than drunk is just stupid.
I know. It's so good. And, you know, maybe they have like a little goat farm. I don't know. We're just...
Oh, petting zoo.
Yes, petting zoo.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. I would probably spend days there.
A little schnockered and cute little animals. Yes, please. Yeah. Right?
A little wine for me. A little wine for you. A little wine for me. A little wine for the goat. A little wine for me. Also for the bunnies.
It works out perfect. So, as Heather points out, Rudy has nothing to lose. Come on, what do you say? Rudy sighs and asks for the contract to read. He looks over and then says that he'll do it on the condition that he gets final say in how the vineyard is represented. As if she's there, like, how many wine or, like, recreational travel shows are there to do exposés on, like, shitty places?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's smart because he's so surly that he might like smile and then be like, cut that. I don't need anybody to see me in that light.
Nobody wants to see me smile. No, we kind of do. You look like very charming and kind of hot when you smile. But I say that's not usually how these things work. But Heather is in a tight spot, so enthusiastically agrees. Heather rushes off to change the contract, and the next thing we know, Shannon is standing in the vineyard, walking backwards and filming Heather and Rudy as they walk and talk. Well, Heather talks, introducing the vineyard, mentioning Eisvein, and Rudy is full of, not so great for an interview. After a few tries, Rudy confesses, you know, I'm not good at this. You should have Anton do it instead. He's the charming one.
That's the first thing I thought.
Yeah, me too.
Like, why the fuck are you talking to him? The guy that's actually wants you to be here. Maybe you want him in front of the camera instead of the difficult, doesn't want to be here, would rather see you drive off in the back of your car than the front of your camera.
Yeah. And Shannon sees what I didn't see up until she points it out, because Rudy was such a pain in the patootie. And she points it out elegantly. Yeah, but Anton doesn't look like you. What, are we going to pretend he's not incredibly handsome? And let's take a moment to address the physical differences between Anton and Rudy. Basically, Rudy is a giant. Looks like a handsome, clean-shaven lumberjack with light brown hair, while Anton, while very cute looking, does not offer the haughty, I'm going to tear off your clothes in a very consensual but hot way look that Rudy has.
Fair. I agree with that.
Yeah. Heather insists that the audience will want to hear from Rudy, the owner of the vineyard, and Shannon suggests a team building exercise to help Rudy and Heather bond and help him loosen up a bit. I love it. You know, just like relax, loosen up a bit. That's another great term, right?
So they're going to go sit on the hot tub together?
Yeah. That sounds like a good time to me.
That would loosen up anybody.
No, Tamara. They're going to build a snowman. Do you want to build a snowman?
No, I want to sit in a hot tub.
Same.
Oh, so building a snowman competition? Rudy begrudgingly agrees, and that evening they gather with the other people in the town square where they begin to work on building the snowman. And this snowman-making festival has its challenges. There's only a few inches of snow on the ground, and the contestants are like 8 feet apart. So I imagine a Hunger Games situation where an alarm goes off and all the people are forced to use their bodies to scoop and shove the snow into their respective areas. And if it goes to blows, well, then there's where the real team building comes in.
Ooh,
AKA,
then you can
there's
use
not enough snow for
blood
me.
To like color your, you know, put like a little smile on your snowman.
Yes. If you've got sticks that you want to use those sticks for the snowman's arms or to poke your competition in the eye, it could go either way. See?
Oh, great ingenuity there, Tam. I like it.
Yes. But the lack of snow is not the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge is that Heather wants to map out exactly how they're going to execute their snowman. She wants them to brainstorm themes first and plan, which seems very different from the Heather at work, who seems to favor a little more spontaneity. I'm just saying.
True.
Rudy insists that they start rolling the snowman. They must gather the snow. And when Heather finally relents, they bend over and knock heads. Exasperated, Rudy explains, that giant hat you're wearing is hard. Heather, who does slightly resemble a Canadian Mountie, declares, this hat isn't big, it's cute. Rudy sighs and starts mounding up the snow, and Heather starts some light conversation like, how do you like it here in Lake Chelan? He responds, it's nice, and continues quietly sculpting. Heather prompts him, and this is where you ask me,
Heather, where do you live? Do you like it there?
Rudy gamely asks. And she responds, I live in L.A. and I love it there. Plus, the people are friendly. Tamara is going to notch right in here and disagree heartily, because I would not consider L.A. to be a friendly town. Just saying. But then again, I've only been here for like 12 years. So maybe I don't know. But I do concur with her other two statements, which are, it's sunny all the time and she can get really good sushi whenever she wants. Rudy assents. Sounds nice. Do you get back home very often? And Heather admits, no, work has kind of taken over things, but I love it. What I don't love is that I don't get to see my dad very often, particularly since my mom died. It was 6 years ago, but it doesn't feel that long.
Aww.
Rudy nods as he clumps more snow onto their snowman mound and says, No amount of time changes how much we miss the ones we love most. Banger line, Katie Wilbert, author of the script. The duo starts to bond, and they both finish the snowman. But sadly, their down-under wine-themed-looking snowman loses to a classic Frosty.
Boom.
They both declare, rigged, at the same time, and laughed at their shared moment. Heather lets Rudy know that she's got to get back to Shannon, but it was great hanging out together. And as she walks away, he looks at her retreating figure with hearts in his eyes.
Ooh.
What? Oh, what a difference a snowman makes. On her walk home, Heather gets a call from Timmy. Apparently, for some reason, Shannon decided to share the botched opening footage that they filmed earlier that day. I would have just said there's a delay in shooting or sent B-roll footage. Anywho, Timmy isn't thrilled and threatens Heather, telling her that your job is on the line. Heather assures her that she's fixed the problem. They have much better footage that's coming her way, but Timmy has already hung up because she's so busy and important. Yay, shitty bosses!
Yay! Back at the Marquez house, Heather comes home to plaid jammies that her dad left her on her bed. Shannon comes in and lets her know that Heather's dad has also given her matching jammies, and he took her to a Jewish deli called the Challah Garden. Challah! Shannon is fortunately delighted by Heather's dad, and a big shout out to the writer of this movie, Katie Wilbert, or if she's feeling spicy, Will Bear, who made the work bestie have a life outside of the main character. She's there for more than just to be an exposition person. Speaking of exposition, though, Heather does let Shannon know that she's bonded with Rudy and thinks things are going to go much better tomorrow. In the morning, everyone is downstairs in their matching jammies, and Dad lets Heather know that he's decided to do Friends Christmas this year, something they haven't done since Heather's mom died. Heather is thrilled and explains to Shannon that Friends Christmas is a gathering where friends come over and share their family holiday traditions. Heather explains that her mom being Irish and her dad Filipino, there are lots of traditions just from that. Shannon is in and suggests that they invite the Knobloch brothers. And when Heather pish-poshes the idea, Shannon playfully states, "Well, if you don't invite them, I will." Ha ha! Ha 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 ha! Yeah, Shannon. You get it. After everyone has had breakfast, Shannon and Heather head to the vineyard, and Heather reminds Rudy, just pretend like the camera isn't here, and you're just talking to me on a tour or something. Rudy does great this time, talking about ice wine, how it's super sweet due to its high sugar concentration from being frozen, and also how they harvest it at the chill temperatures of 15 to 17 degrees. He even makes a punny joke. What do winemakers call ice wine harvesting season?
I don't know, Corinne. What do they call the ice wine harvesting season?
The most wonderful time of the year. You're not laughing uproariously. Thank you. By the end of the interview, the puns are flying and they are hella bantering with each other, and their hands even touch when the two of them make Spritzgebäck cookies for the show. Ooh, Heather and Rudy sitting in a tree. Look at their hands touching. At the end, Heather invites Rudy and his brother to Friends Christmas.
And it's a good thing that they invited Rudy and Anton to Friends Christmas, because otherwise there'd be no friends at Friends Christmas, because it's just Dad, Shannon, Heather, Rudy, and Anton attending. That is unlike any Filipino gathering that I've ever gone to, because I know a lot of people of Filipino descent when I lived in the Bay Area, and their gatherings are usually huge with tons of people. So I was very surprised to see this understated Friends Christmas.
Yeah, I think that Friends Christmas had budgetary constraints in the extras department is what I think.
Yes. But what they lack in people, they make up in fun.
Yay!
Dad kicks it off by singing "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" on his portable karaoke machine as Anton dances in the room behind him holding a jug of Glühwein, which means glow wine, which is a spiced wine that makes you feel so good you glow. I bet it's nice and spicy coming back up too. everybody digs in and shares their international holiday stories, including how in Ireland there's a day called Women's Christmas on January 6th. After all the cooking and celebrating is done, the women get the day off and the men have to stay home and clean up everything and put it all away. Dad says, "We still celebrate it in Betty's, Heather's mom's honor." And I had so many questions because I'm like, really? Is this really a thing? So I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole.
Ooh, yes, please.
About the Women's Christmas, because I'm like, if it's January 6th, Americanized holidays usually end on New Year's Day and then everything kind of dies down. So I'm like, is that just kind of a backwards shitty way to be like, yeah, you can have the day off on the 6th after everything's done and over with and already cleaned up because it's like 5 days after the festivities?
Well, but apparently, I thought that you were like, I have watched Dairy Girl so many times, all the seasons, over and over, and I have not seen a Women's Christmas ever in an episode.
True.
So I'm highly suspicious. That's what I would have thought that you might have felt.
Nope. You would think, but no, you'd be wrong. So apparently, when I looked it up, celebrations usually end on New Year's Day. So I thought to myself, what a crock that any Irish woman would let things sit and fester for 5 days or so. But it's actually modeled after the 12 days of Christmas, which starts on Christmas Day and ends on the 6th. So the festivities last up until the 6th, and that is the day you take down your decorations or else it's bad luck.
Oh.
So it's actually legitimate.
Ooh. Well, I figured that Katie had done her research, so I trusted her unlike you, but, you know, I appreciate you giving us the
background. I'm not saying I didn't trust Katie. All I'm saying is, why the fuck would it be on the 6th if all the cleaning and putting away of things would probably happen on the 2nd or 3rd. And so that's when I was like, the husbands are over there going, yeah, honey, don't you worry about anything. I got everything all cleaned up. 3 days after you already like did the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
So back to the story. Even though it seems like Dad is a one-man festive machine, it's still a sweet sentiment about the Women's Christmas. Pop also got a menorah for Shannon so she can share her family's tradition since the last night of Hanukkah. They take turns passing the menorah around the table, lighting the different candles as she explains the history behind that ritual. Once the candles are all lit, Shannon puts in the front window to remind people that miracles can and do happen. And I am, for one, hoping for the biggest of miracles between Israel and Palestine, Corinne wrote. Oh, fuck. Yeah.
I mean, true. I am. I am hoping for the biggest of miracles between Israel and Palestine.
Yeah. After dinner is over, they say goodbye on the front porch, which has only three Christmas trees on it. Shannon dumps a bunch of leftovers into Anton's arms, and Anton heads to the truck to put them away. Shannon and Dad head back into the house, and Rudy and Heather are left all alone on the porch under the mistletoe. They both want a kiss, but Rudy says he's not going to kiss just because of the mistletoe, and Heather totally agrees. No, 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 that would be ridiculous. Who would want that? They look up at each other, and the kiss tractor beam flickers on, but kiss us, interrupt us, because Anton hits the panic button on the truck, and their moment is broken by beep, beep, beep of the horn, and Anton needing help because his hands are full and he can't turn it off. Come get me, Rudy. Help me, Rudy.
Rudy, I need you.
Oh, you're about to kiss her? Oh, I'm just going to drop this package. Hurry, hurry.
This won't be the last time Anton interrupts their potential love. Oh, Anton, you chaotic agent.
Yes. I'm starting to wonder if he really does... He's trying to thwart them for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he doesn't want the winery to be successful, mayhaps.
Oh.
Foreshadowing.
I don't know. The next morning, Shannon bounds into Heather's room. It's 10 a.m. and Heather has slept in. She wouldn't have bothered to wake her up, but Tammy has been calling. Dun, 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 dun. Why has Tammy been calling when she could have left a voicemail or an email?
I am sipping from a coffee cup right now that says I sat in a meeting that could have been an email. Maybe that's the vibe Tammy's giving.
Mm-hmm. Well, she needs to personally question Heather as to why is there no Christmas in this episode. that she wanted to have the perfect pairing of family, Christmas, and wine.
Temi, did you not see the bounce house and the cocoa shed and the petting zoo? Did they not get that in the B-roll? No.
They should have. What about the funnel cake? You're just bitter because you didn't get the funnel cake. I think that's the true reason why. Yes.
Absolutely.
And can you imagine Rudy signing off on a bounce house and a petting zoo?
No. Again, why I'm starting to see why this vineyard's not successful.
Tamai continues, unless she sees some really family-oriented Christmas wine festivities, as Christmas wine festivities frequently are, Heather can kiss read between the vines, the European tour, au revoir. That's French for goodbye.
No.
Oui. Heather quickly gets dressed and heads out to the vineyard. She pleads with Rudy for him to do the Christmas food and wine festival, but he isn't budging. He asks her, why do you want to do it so badly anyways? Is it just for your show? And Heather...
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Same. I'm like, yeah, Heather, you need it for your show.
Why don't you just go ahead and throw a whole Christmas festival together for me real quick? Can you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Heather is pretty convincing, and she's got those big, long lashes that she can bat at a person, you know. Heather takes a moment to reflect and then sentimentally responds that nothing has been the same since her mom died, and they always used to go to this as a family. Holding the festival this year would kind of be like having a piece of her mom back. Rudy reveals that the reason why they weren't doing it this year was simply because they don't have the money for it. Heather looks surprised and apologizes. I'm sorry, I didn't know. I'm happy to chip in the remainder of my per diem that I didn't use because we didn't pay for a hotel and also round up a bunch of volunteers for you. We can make this happen. Rudy agrees, and Anton wanders into the vineyard asking what he's missed. When he finds out the festival is on, he is beyond pleased and asks, what changed your mind? Heather shimmies her shoulders with a mischievous look on her face, and Anton says to her, I like what you've done to my brother. You've affected him in a very positively productive way. Heather smiles happily, saying, well, I can't stay around forever, but definitely through Christmas. Anton balks with the realization, wait a minute, isn't the festival held the week before Christmas? Heather affirms this, and Anton says, that means we only have 7 days to get it all together.
That's plenty of time in, well, this not Hallmark world. Let's say it's Hallmark world.
Hallmark adjacent world. Oh, yes.
Hallmark adjacent world.
And Heather says, oh, we can do it. I know we can. She yells over her shoulder as she runs off. Meet me at the Holla Garden in an hour.
See, in the Hallmark world, it would have been like 2 days. Hallmark adjacent, they need a little bit more time. So it's 7 because they don't have quite as much Christmas magic as the Hallmark movies. Also, I love how Heather used the dead relative as a kind of a guilting ploy to have the festival. And how much was that hotel going to be if she has part of her per diem that she's offered to run a festival? Like, were they going to stay in a nice ass fucking hotel? And if so, I would be even more pissed if I was Shannon.
Yes, they were going to stay in a nice ass hotel. Shannon was like, can't wait to stay at a nice ass hotel. And Heather was like, well, actually,
I'm going to be spooning you in my childhood bed.
Exactly. And my dad's going to make us all of our meals. And he's also going to take you on many trips throughout the town of Lake Chelan.
Beautiful. Rudy does meet Heather at the Holla Garden in an hour, and they have a very small planning meeting over jelly donuts and come to the joint conclusion that it should be like Friends Christmas, but bigger. Rudy raises his mug of cocoa and says, to the first annual multicultural Christmas food and wine festival hosted by Knobloch Family Wines. And Heather smiles. What it lacks in brevity, it makes up for with oodles of Christmas spirit. He responds, Donkashane. And she responds, yeah, that. And they click cocoa mugs. So what does one do after they've decided a theme for their Christmas festival? First, they flyer the town. Next, they go hiking through the woods using the oldest looking snowshoes I've seen in a while and hauling a freshly cut Christmas tree through said woods. Heather flops down the tree that they've cut for a bit of a breather and a question for Rudy. Why the woods and a fresh cut tree? and this moment is perfect for a bit of Rudy's origin story. Unfortunately, Rudy brought the cutest plaid thermos and a couple of cups of cocoa to share the story with her. They sit on some tree stumps, and he explains that he grew up in the magical land of Northern Michigan until he was 9, when his family moved back to Germany to help Grandma out with the original family winery there. It was culture shock. But what hit him really hard was when Christmas rolled around and he wanted to go to the tree farm that they'd always gone to, which had trains, apple cider, games, and I'm going to guess very overpriced Christmas trees, and was very inconveniently located in Michigan, not Germany. So, as a consolation, his family took him and his brother out to the woods to cut down their own tree. Rudy complained the entire car ride until they got there, and then it was magic.
Aww.
And unexpected, and such a wonderful experience for him. He tells Heather, "So when things aren't going well for me, I just remind myself that my favorite memories haven't happened yet. I didn't think I could love anything more than that tree farm, but when I discovered the acoustic version in Germany, I found something that I loved even more." Heather chuckles. "You really light up when you talk about things you're passionate about, and you're so easy to listen to. You'd actually be very good at what I do." Rudy smiles back at her. "Thanks, but I don't think so." She pushes. "I'm serious. You know your wines, and you're now a natural on camera, thanks to me." They gaze at each other, practically eye-fucking. Tensions are rising, so Heather deflects, saying, "Oh my goodness, did you see that Tannenbaum?" She gestures her head over at a tree, and Rudy says, "Oh, I didn't realize you were fluent," because Tannenbaum means fir tree in German, which I didn't know either. And Heather nods her head somberly. "Yeah, I knew Tella all the words."
However, that sweet moment becomes a fading memory when she gets back home to a threatening email from Tammy, demanding to know where her perfect Christmas pairing is.
I'm going to say that perfect Christmas pairing is going to be Heather and another job anywhere but working with Tammy.
Oh my gosh. Can we just oust Tammy in sort of a Antoinette, you know, style fashion or something? I don't know. Off with her head. Off with her head.
Sure.
Later we see them setting up the festival, and that's when we find out in the vaguest way possible that Anton is gay. After Heather points to Shannon and Anton giggling with each other. And so Katie fills us in that there were scenes cut that were more explicitly implied Anton's gayness.
Yes.
And so instead we were left ultimately with two scenes upon a further watching that I picked up on it, but I didn't pick up on it otherwise. So we're letting you in on the knowledge here, gentle listeners. When you watch this movie, Anton is gay.
Gay.
Yes. Heather points to Shannon and Anton giggling with each other, and she says, "Love connection." And Rudy says, "Well, let's just say that Shannon isn't Anton's type." Heather questions this, and he elaborates more vaguely with, "He has no problems getting dates." Ta-da! Gay. I'm like, that could mean that he only likes blondes or brunettes. Like, Shannon's like a redhead, you know? It could mean anything, but yes.
He could be a playboy. He could get dates at the drop of a hat. People might think that he's the hotter brother. A myriad of things, not just gay.
Yes. And so now I'm back to shipping Shannon and Heather's dad, because they are actually super cute together. They are very cute together.
And they do not get together, at least that we see on camera. Uh-huh.
I know. Winky, winky.
They are gone a lot. They do go off.
I have a fantasy when ultimately Heather achieves the Behind the Vines European tour. He says that he's going to visit on the European tour, and Shannon and him end up, you know, touring Europe together. Adieu. Mm. Yes.
Katie, are you listening? Katie? Are you listening? Sequel.
But this merriment is, there's lots of room for a sequel in this movie. Like, there's so many plot points that are poised for movie sequel magic, like when they run into the ex-girlfriend in Paris.
No. Oh.
And unresolved feelings. Yes. So their merriment, though, is shot down when Anton appears. Apparently the weather is going to be perfect for harvesting the grapes during the festival, and they just can't do it all. But Heather has a great idea. What if the people volunteered to help with the harvest? Shannon seconds this. "As my bubby says, many hands make light work." And they all happily agree to the logistical nightmare of harvesting ice wine and a Christmas festival at the same time. Cool, cool, cool.
Nope, that is a festival that I don't want to attend. I do not want to be picking grapes in the middle of the night in sub-freezing weather. Thanks very much.
Seriously. I'll just be back in the tasting room by the cozy fire with my cocoa.
Yes.
I mean, glühwein, yes.
Just ask any migrant worker how fun it is picking grapes. Isn't that a good time?
So fun.
Yeah. You want to do a festival or do you want to go pick some fruit?
Huh?
Daddy will bring his karaoke machine so he'll serenade you while you're out there. And that's not fun.
He's like the smartest one of the bunch. He's like, I'm not picking a fucking wine.
Yes.
Well, let's not get distracted with that right now. Details, details, details. Because what's really important here is love. Christmas love. And Rudy asks Heather if she'll stay for dinner. And the next thing we know, it's nighttime. Rudy and Heather are in the super cozy part of the tasting room that has no fewer than three Christmas trees, a roaring fire. And they are sitting opposite each other in a pair of wingback chairs in front of said fire. A small table between them with marble cake. And the very adult beverage choice of decaf coffee.
Mm-mm.
Is it Sanka? Is it you, Ben? We will never know.
Is it the 80s, Corinne?
Is it Maxwell House? The best part of waking up.
It's Folgers. You didn't even say Folgers.
Oh, shit.
Folgers.
Dang it. Heather asks. Sorry, I got the giggles. I just think about Sanka and I start laughing. I think of Sanka and, like, you know, the tights that they wear at, like, Hooters that are, like, kind of orange, like, day glow, like,
yeah,
shiny tan tights that,
yeah,
like, yeah. Heather asks after taking a bite of marble cake, so why isn't there a Mrs. Rudy Knobloch? And Rudy, surprisingly, is very open, sharing, I was engaged to our old tasting manager, Ashley. We were together for 3 years before I proposed. However, once we were engaged, she passed her Master Sommelier exam. And because of that, was offered a job as a sommelier at a prestigious restaurant in Paris.
Oh, It's all making sense now.
Mm-hmm. She took the job and I stayed. She wasn't willing to do long distance and I was in charge of my family's winery in the States and didn't feel like I could leave. She's great. There are no hard feelings, but it just didn't end up working out. What about you? Why isn't there a Mr. Marquez? Heather says that though there have been several lovely relationships, her partners have always felt like she was too busy with work and travels too much and that her career is more important than her relationship. Rudy looks at her softly and says, the right person is going to support your dreams. Heather smiles with heart eyes back at him and says, you're right. Rudy feigns confusion. I'm sorry? Heather repeats, you're right. And Rudy requests, I'd really like to get that in writing, please. Heather banters back, only if I get a proviso. Ha ha. And I wonder what her proviso would be. You're right. But if I find you to be wrong, you must massage my feet. I don't know.
Or other things.
Rudy confesses to Heather, the winery is just something I've always done because it was the family business. I never took time to figure out what it was I actually wanted to do. Heather looks at him seductively. Well, do you know what you want now? Rudy matches her gaze and with a soft smile on his face says, I'm starting to. Do you know what you want? And Heather replies, I do now. And for what may very well be the first fucus interruptus in a Hallmark-style movie because they look like they're about to tear each other's clothes off and what they do want now is each other and do each other in front of the fire until fucking Anton, the brother with supposed game who you think would respect another person's game, interrupts their cozy evening by walking enthusiastically into the room with a sparkly deer lawn ornament sculpture he found, declaring, hey, look at this bad boy.
Anton!
Anton! When he realizes they were having a moment, he immediately retreats, but their fuck-me moment has been broken, and Heather says that she should go. But before she goes, Rudy, in his soft, sultry voice, asks her if she wants to go on a date, one that Anton will not be in a 10-mile radius of, and she agrees.
Oh, thank
God for that.
Anton, cockblocker. The Christmas festival goes off without a hitch. It's a hit with the community, and so many people shared their family cultural dishes. At the end of the evening, Rudy and Heather stand outside and pour each other some Glühwein. Shannon films them, asking, "Tell our audience about the festival." Heather looks at Rudy with a, "You're up, Buster." And he says, "This year's Christmas food and wine festival was a success thanks to Tannen TV's Heather Marquez." Heather chimes in, "And without Rudy, we wouldn't have thought to include cultural and family traditions in this year's festival, including salmon Siberian pie, and my own family recipes like Filipino puto mombong and babinka." Rudy contributes, "And my Alma's Spritzgubek cookies paired with our ice wine." Heather smiles happily, "The perfect Christmas pairing." Rudy gazes at Heather with heart eyes and says, "We do make a good pairing." And I'm like, "How do you know if you haven't kissed? Kisses are like a make or break." Via Corinne. Anywho,
do you
it's
disagree?
Still a really sweet. I think if it's the right guy, I could be like, "This is the way I like to be kissed. So let's work on it."
Have you
if
tried
it's a bad
training? Have you tried kiss training with, you know?
Yes. Yes.
How successful have you been with kiss training?
Pretty successful. But that was just with one person that I spent a really long time with. So we had a lot of time.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anywho, it's a really sweet moment, and Shannon heads off to upload the footage to Timi. Later that evening, all the guests are picking grapes for the ice wine harvest, except for Dad, who's really smart, who decided to bring his traveling karaoke machine and serenade everybody with Silent Night so he didn't have to work, and is accompanied by Anton, who apparently had a guitar strap for his electrical piano and a flautist. I'd be like, "I don't even play an instrument, but I'll be right alongside with you guys so I don't have to pick grapes. Yay." Because you know you can't pick ice wine grapes without the proper musical serenade.
Seriously. And jazz flute.
If I wasn't able to jazz flute along with the impromptu band, I'd be like, "Okay, you guys need to put those fucking instruments down, because the sooner that we get this done, the sooner I could leave. So all hands on deck, goddammit. I do not need to hear your fucking Silent Night. Put that down. Pick up some grapes." At the end of the evening, Heather and Rudy are alone in the cask room as he pours the last of the juice from the pressed grapes into the fermentation tank. They're thrilled, and Heather gets a phone call from Timi. She's all full of praise, which Heather doesn't know how to respond to because it never happens. And Timi tells her that she's needed back to work ASAP to start working on the Read Between the Vines European tour. The sponsors are so happy with how the Christmas episode is going, they want a January start date for the European show. They think it's going to be so family friendly, and once again, I'm confused as to why a wine show needs to be family friendly. But Heather's thrilled. And Timi ends the conversation with, "See you back in the office before the New Year's." And I would be like, "Sorry, but I'm working remote, Timi. Fuck this shit." But Heather doesn't say that. And regardless, Timi has already hung up the phone. Heather goes upstairs to the tasting room, and this is when we see a hottie patati guy writing his number on a napkin for Anton and stuffing it sexily into his suit jacket pocket. Wow.
That's the second blink if you miss it kind of thing, yeah. Which is like, could be any number of things, but I didn't notice that the first time.
I did not track that until we were like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yep.
See, gay. Very gay.
So gay.
Rudy approaches Heather, thanking her for everything she's done. He says, "With the Christmas party and the show, you may have single-handedly saved the winery." Heather's very excited, too, and lets him know about Read Between the Vines, the European tour. But Rudy's not happy about it. He's kind of an ass. No, he's not just kind of an ass. He is an ass. And he's flashing back on once again on being left for Europe. However, Heather holds firm. This is what she wants, and she's going for it. And Rudy gets mean, saying, "Well, it's like you said, all your relationships fail because of work, so why should this be any different?" Wow. 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 And so, while previously I thought Rudy looked so handsome in that pumpkin-colored sweater, now I think it makes him look like a big old pumpkin face. Yes, I called you a pumpkin face, Rudy, okay? Mm-mm. She calls him out on his bullshit. "You were just thanking me for saving the winery, and now we're done? We still have time for a date. We still have time for more." But Rudy is stoic and not interested, and Heather leaves brokenhearted.
Mm.
And now for a very special episode of ODK Theater.
Oh my god, it's been so long since we had an episode of ODK Theater.
I know! Welcome to ODK Theater. Rudy finds himself in a situation where he is upset. Very upset. But fortunately, he has his brother Anton to guide him through this part of his life. Tamara, do you want to play the very upset baby man Rudy or the sage wisdom of the ages Anton?
I'm getting some very big baby man energy, so I will take the part of Rudy. Thank you.
Nice. As Rudy stormily cleans up from the Christmas party in the tasting room, Anton calls him out. I thought you'd be happier. Everything was a success.
Heather's leaving me for Europe. All my ladies leave me for Europe.
You'll love powerful women. That's a good thing. And maybe if all your ladies are leaving you for Europe, maybe you should be doing things differently.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm perfect, except for my surly, icy introductions, but ultimately my face intervenes and ladies love my face. But then, for some reason, that doesn't lead to lasting love, and they go far, far away.
You haven't followed them due to your strong sense of family loyalty, your loyalty to this winery. But let's just put it out there. Let's just put it out there. You don't want to be here.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, but you do. There's more than one brother who can run this winery. There's me. Me. The youngest brother, always in your shadow, looking for my own way to shine. I love this winery way of life. Rudy, find what you want and try not to be scared of it. Anton walks off, leading Rudy to reflect upon his life until this point and what he really wants beyond the temporary thrill of making sweet love to Heather in front of the tasting room fire. And that concludes this very special episode of ODK Theater.
I think we have to tell the gentle listeners at the top of the show that ODK Theater is something we did quite frequently back in our Hallmark days, where we showcased a scene where I played one character and Corinne played the other when it was most impactful in our outline.
Yes. It's a way to spice up Hallmark movies a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. And for our own
entertainment.
Secret enjoyment.
Yes. Yes. So Shannon, Heather, and Dad celebrate Christmas morning with pancakes, and then perhaps Heather and Shannon return home on Christmas Day, maybe? I don't know. Heather is surprised that Rudy hasn't even texted her, but he was acting like a big baby man, and hopefully with some time and distance, Rudy will come to his senses.
Speaking of Rudy, Anton has another talk with him and basically says, "You need to see if you can be the co-host of Between the Vines with Heather and leave me to run the winery, motherfucker. I've been poised to take over for years, and if this were a Lifetime movie, I would have killed you off already. But this is a Hallmark-style movie, so I'm gently prompting you to move on. Move on!" Which is obviously the better choice all around, as we at ODK say, communication over murder.
Yes.
But do we, though?
Yes, 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 we do.
So I was thinking, like, initially when Anton was maybe not wanting his brother to leave, that he knows that his brother's heart is not in the winery and was like, if I thwart his love interest, then, you know, maybe this won't work out and he'll stay here forever. But that apparently is not the point. And I obviously think the worst of people.
Well,
anywho.
I think that Anton wants to turn the winery into his own, like, little sex playpen where he just has, like, you know, these raging parties and he ends up, like,
yes,
behind the casks making out with, like, different hottie guys. Yeah. So, you know.
Uh-huh. And after all this group sex, guys, we're going to go outside and we're going to pick some grapes. Okay. Does that sound good? Yeah.
Your big nard will shrivel down to a little nard because it's going to be fucking cold out there. But, you know. Mm-hmm.
After I pick your grapes, you can pick my grapes. How does that sound?
Nice and juicy. Love it. Mm.
Back in L.A., several days have passed, and Shannon encourages Heather to go home to her dad for the Irish Women's Day and maybe see if Rudy's around. Winky, winky. Heather flies home to Washington for Women's Christmas, and on her porch is Rudy.
Ooh.
Rudy explains, I'm sorry, Heather. I know it's Women's Christmas, and I've got a lot of clearing up to do with you. He walks down a few stairs so he's no longer towering over her. Good move, Rudy. And says, you came into my life, and you shook it up in the best way. I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself, and I was complacent about it. In contrast to you, who knows exactly what they want and goes after it. Heather responds, yes, but that isn't going to change about me. And Rudy explains, I don't want it to. You made normal boring. And before you go to Europe, I want you to know how excited I am for you and how I'm looking forward to your next venture and that it was worth it getting to know you and falling for you, even if this is goodbye. Heather impulsively says, come with me. Come with me to Europe. Let's see if whatever this is real, like you said. Our favorite memories have yet to be made, and maybe they're in Europe with me. He looks up at her, hearts in his eyes, and says, I don't know. Maybe there may be some memories to be made with me here before you go to Europe. And they kiss, and it's a good one that we've been waiting for since halfway through the movie when they're in front of that stupid fireplace.
It's a really good one. It's like, it's actually hot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's hot, but I'd be like, oh, Heather, danger, girl, danger. You're going to go get into a work relationship and a relationship with somebody you haven't known that long.
Ooh, who had a big baby man moment.
Yeah. Right. Not too long ago. Not too long ago, mind you, but I'm like, danger, girl, danger. Aruga, aruga, aruga. But apparently, my concerns were unfounded because we flash forward to Heather walking through an Italian vineyard and
just look
who pops into the frame. Rudy, the new co-host of Between the Vines. They are in love and have no problem declaring that they love each other on camera and kissing on it as well. This must be the family-oriented wine programming Tim I was looking for, and I hope they live happily ever after. The end. Woo! Vineyard at Christmas. We just had a vineyard at Christmas. Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give this movie?
I give this movie 3 dry kisses, which means this is a movie that I will totally be watching again and enjoyed. I loved how diverse it was. I really enjoyed fantasizing, making some fanfic about Shannon and Heather's dad together.
Sequel. Sequel's all I'm saying. Sequel.
Sequel. Absolutely. Intergenerational romance of love. And I thought it had some really nice touches in it. Like I said, there were some great lines. And like Shannon actually did have a life outside of just showing up for Heather to exposition onto.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. that was really nice. I appreciated that a lot. I thought it was well done. And I give this 3 dry kisses. How many dry kisses do you give this, Tam?
I'm going to agree with your sentiment, Corinne. I'm going to say it's a very solid 3 dry kisses.
Yeah.
One I would recommend anybody to see. One I enjoyed immensely. I did like the chemistry between Rudy and Heather. They
yes.
They generated some heat
they
on
did.
The screen. Again, liked the diversity. I liked the family dynamic and how they brought in the cultural aspects. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, I love me some good ice wine, even though I've never had any ice wine. I think we're failing as podcast hosts continually having these ice wine conversations and not sampling some. Even if it is in slurpy form, which might be preferable. Yep, I'm going to say 3 dry kisses. Go out and see it. Katie Wilbert is a wonderful writer, and she made a good movie.
Yes, she did. Okay, and so thank you so much, Katie, for spending time with us and for the interview. It was great and it was super illuminating. I got to ask a lot of questions that I've been wondering about, generally speaking. And and Tamara,
yes.
What movie do we have coming up next week? Our final movie before we go on break in January.
Ooh, we are doing Single All the Way. A gay Christmas rom-com.
With the dreamy Luke McFarlane.
Oh, yes. It's going to be a full-on Christmas movie, but it's going to be a little Hallmark adjacent because it's got Luke McFarlane in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's got an all-star cast. It's fantastic.
It does, yes.
Well, if you have anything that you would like to say about how awesome Katie Wilbert is, A Vineyard Christmas, Single All the Way, or anything else, you can reach out to us via email, onedrykiss@gmail.com, or through the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, we'd love to see any ratings and reviews you'd like to give us. And if you even have like a little tidbit of information you want to tack onto that review, we would be glad to hear it. But as always, we'd like to thank you for stopping by. And we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! We'll see you next time.
See you next time. Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, how lovely are thy branches.
Bring it home, Corinne.